and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm here with Robin Martinez. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Joyce. How's everything?
Doing pretty well, and we're so glad to be back in action and back with all of you. I hope that you heard our annual report that I did last week and some new recording about polio eradication, which I find personally fascinating. And today we're going to talk some more about lung cancer, and we have a special guest with us today from the Mesothelioma and Asbestos Awareness Center, maacenter.org. Welcome, Allison Grimes.
Hi, Joy. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So tell us a little bit about mesothelioma. So this is a cancer, right?
Yes. It's a very rare cancer that develops in the lining of the lungs, in the abdomen or heart.
Right. Basically, so it's not always lung cancer, but frequently is. Predominantly is?
Predominantly, but there's also other forms of mesothelioma. There's pleural mesothelioma, which is the right most common type that develops in the lung lining. That's about, I would say, more than 75% of all mesothelioma cases would be pleural mesothelioma.
Okay, and pleural meaning lung.
Yes,
affecting
the
lung. And so it's the lining of the lung or the heart or the abdomen that becomes affected with this cancer. And
yes.
So, as we saw before, 4% of lung cancer in the general population is generally attributable to asbestos. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And to add from that, I would say even like occupational asbestos exposure accounts for 5 to 7% of all lung cancer cases in the United States. But yes, I think 4% is a safe number there.
I know there's a kind of stigma that tends to go with lung cancer. When somebody says, oh, they have lung cancer, almost the very first question is, how long have you smoked?
Right.
And so there's a kind of vision of you did it to yourself that comes out around lung cancer. But in fact, that's not at all true. And yes, there's a very large percentage that is due to smoking, firsthand and secondhand smoking, but there are these other causes that we need to be aware of, and to a certain extent, we can do something about it, right? So,
absolutely.
Tell us what asbestos tends to do to you.
Sure. Well, asbestos is a silicate mineral. So if you can imagine, the form of it is like a crumbly form of what you're usually exposed to when you do find asbestos. But when the actual fibers become airborne, so if you touch the asbestos and they're floating around in the air, you inhale them, they then can become latched into the lining of the lungs, and then years later, around 15 years even, you can develop or start to show signs or experience signs of mesothelioma or asbestosis, other signs. But yes, when the asbestos becomes airborne and inhaled, that's where the trouble is caused, or in the abdomen.
So when I was growing up, before there was the internet and a long time ago, asbestos was thought to be this wonderful building material because it was fireproof. And so whenever it was important not to have fire, they began to use it in construction. So famously in shipbuilding, schools, roofing.
Insulation.
Insulation. Break. So it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say any building, really, before 1980 was most likely built with asbestos inside.
Now, where would that be? Because I know our insulation in our house is not asbestos, but where would you find the asbestos other than that?
Otherwise, you will find it. You can find it in tiling, in roofing, in piping, in basements generally, attics even.
So I have a house that was built in 1920 that had a great big old hulky steam system. And around all of these huge pipes in my basement, there was a wrapping of asbestos, the fibery kind, the little particles, and then it had a cloth covering over it. So 100 years later, the cloth, of course, has deteriorated, and the little particles were beginning to get sprinkled all over my basement. So what a homeowner has to do at this point is either have it professionally removed because it's toxic for the environment. Nobody wants this stuff anymore. But it was the top of the line insulation in its day. Or you have to do what's called encapsulating it, which is to wrap those pipes. I wrapped them in heavy aluminum foil and then put duct tape around it just as a temporary measure until we finally did have it all professionally removed. But it's a huge problem, and it's expensive because the guys in the spacesuits have to come in and take it away in special trucks and put it in special places. So it's not cheap, but it is important to do because if you or your children are exposed to this, it can cause problems, as you say, not immediately, but 10, 15 years down the line.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Robin, do you run into very many cases of mesothelioma in your work?
No, we haven't run into too many. But I was just thinking, do you know that Kent cigarette filters were made with African blue asbestos?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And my parents smoked Kents for years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's strange and interesting, but at the time everybody thought, oh, asbestos, it's wonderful. You know, it's so handy.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, mesothelioma is relatively uncommon, and I believe the lifespan of most of the patients, unfortunately, at this point is short until we get better treatments. It's like pancreatic cancer, that most people aren't around long enough to really become activists.
Well, several years ago, I was in Portsmouth, England, and staying with a woman whose husband had worked in the shipbuilding industry and had died of mesothelioma, and she took me with her to a support group meeting in Portsmouth for families who had lost someone to mesothelioma, and I was surprised how many people there were in that room dealing with it. There must have been 50 people, widows and family members dealing with the impact of mesothelioma in particular.
Yes, and if I can say, even in the U.S. Navy experience between 1922 and I would say about 1939, they used crystallite for gaskets and the insulation and packing and their tape. So can you imagine the additional exposure there?
Now, there's a case going on in Texas now about asbestos in the drinking water. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Yep. So that's a recent post and I guess topic of discussion that we've been reporting on and advocating on, that there have been even levels of 7 million fibers per liter in drinking water.
Can
imagine, right, and it can, of course, I guess for the level of concern, we recommend, or we've been seeing, that obviously not to panic because there's regulations set forth by the U.S. EPA requiring public water to test water regularly and make sure that water is safe. So there's no concern to panic, but of course it's still important to be aware of it and to make sure it can be completely, that drinking water should be tested and for safety.
Well, when you were saying that EPA requires testing, we should hasten to add that that's requiring testing of public water supplies, right? So if you have a pump in your backyard, that's not necessarily being tested. And it probably would be smart to get your water tested at least every several years, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think there were even cases back in 2014 in Flint, Michigan, on children being or not having the safe protection and tests with water.
Right. But do check with your own municipality to make sure that they are testing and that the levels are within the EPA guidelines. And and don't forget about pumps in your backyard, too.
Right.
So what can be done? I mean, if someone does have mesothelioma, what sorts of diagnostic tools, what sorts of treatments are available?
Sure. Well, I can start by saying there's about 300 new cases or diagnoses each year, and the symptoms of mesothelioma develop 10 to 50 years, so that's a long time, 10 to 15 years after being exposed to asbestos. Asbestos is the only proven cause of mesothelioma, so this is why we advocate so strongly to ban asbestos and to educate others on asbestos and the precautions of dangers of asbestos. Treatments, there are conventional treatments, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation. At the moment, there's emerging immunotherapy, gene therapy, and chirotherapy treatments. But what can be done? I would say to educate yourself on asbestos as much as possible and just to be aware of where to find asbestos, what to look out for, and how to, as you mentioned earlier, safely remove asbestos from your home or school, et cetera.
Right. So prevention is key, and yet if it happened 10 or 15 years ago, we're sort of beyond the ability to prevent it at this point. So we do need to make sure that you get as early a diagnosis as possible and talk with an oncology team that's familiar with lung conditions and mesothelioma in particular, right?
Right, especially because the life expectancy after being diagnosed with mesothelioma is between, on the average, 6 to 12 months, but it has been known to, there are known survivors between 1 to 3 years after being diagnosed, though. But, you know, 33% of patients will live longer than a year. So that's that 33% will live between 1 to 3 years after diagnosis.
Right, and hopefully it can help people be as comfortable as possible during that time.
Yes, I was just wondering whether Allison knows anything about the new immunotherapy drugs and whether they have had any effect on mesothelioma.
Yes, immunotherapy treatments, they have been one of the most, they're the emerging treatments right now that's being researched most right now for mesothelioma treatment. Mesothelioma treatments are very, because it is a rare cancer, the research has been limited recently.
Good to know. Good to know that there is hope coming from that direction that immunotherapy is helping.
Yes, absolutely, and for other cancers as well, not just mesothelioma.
Right. Well, most of us in the cancer field know that it's been useful in kidney cancer, melanoma, lung cancer, and some other cancers, and it's being tested on just about everything now because it has been successful in areas where it wasn't expected. But mesothelioma has been so resistant to treatment that it's great to hear there is a hopeful path opening up.
Yeah.
Right, and it's still not a silver bullet, but there's a lot more hope in this direction than we've seen in a while.
Exactly. Well, I do have one other question, and that is, you know that disposing of asbestos, getting it out of a house or building, takes extreme precautions, but what happens to it after it's removed?
Right. Well, in preparation for this show, I was reading some of the guidelines from my own town about how to handle asbestos abatement, and they're saying that it needs to be done by a professional organization and taken to, quote, special landfills, unquote. And what came up for me is if you put it in any landfill, there is a possibility that some of it's going to make its way into the water supply. So I think we have to really be very careful, and hopefully the EPA is watchdogging this on our behalf, is where are we putting this stuff, and how likely is it to reemerge 10, 50 years down the line when somebody's forgotten where we put it all?
Right.
Well, there's one takeaway, and that is if you suspect that you're encountering asbestos in your home, at work, anywhere in the world, do not touch it. Talk to a professional right away.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Allison, for being with us today, and thank you for all your good work in raising the visibility of mesothelioma and asbestos issues. And there are a number of toxins in our environment that we need to start paying attention to, because if we can begin to eliminate some of these causes of cancer, we should be able to reduce the incidence of cancer amongst the next generation of people.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the support, the awareness, and obviously the discussion. It's really been a pleasure, and I appreciate the time.
And thanks, Robin, of course, as always. And thanks to everybody who's been with us today. We hope that you'll have a great week ahead of you. And be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.